really drawn within himself. Therefore, you don't see her. But he and she are enjoying their pastimes within. That's why it says that Yoga Nidra, this divine sleep, is spoken of as ecstatic trance, which is of the nature of the bliss of the true subjective personality or of Mahavishnu. Yeah. It is ecstatic trance of the nature of his pleasure potency. So Mahavishnu and Rama are enjoying their pastimes within Mahavishnu. As a result of that, because those pastimes are so extraordinary and wonderful, his consciousness has also withdrawn within, and his consciousness is absorbed in those pastimes as they go on within. Therefore, externally, he appears to be asleep. But he's not asleep, exactly. He's in that divine state of having exchanges with his pleasure potency internally. Do you follow that? Is that okay? And we'll go on now to 13. The spiritual seeds of Sankarshan, existing in the pores of skin of Mahavishnu, are born as so many golden sperms. These sperms are covered with five great elements. So we've illustrated that here. All these little orange bubbles, they are the universes, actually. It's explained in the purport that these are the seeds of the universes. And they also go flying in between and into the Adhara, accommodating part of Maya. And when they arrive there, then at the bottom of the, at the end of the purport, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta says, when those golden sperms, coming out with the exhalation of Mahavishnu, enter into the unlimited accommodating chamber, this Adhara part of Maya is the accommodating chamber of Maya, they become enlarged by the non-conglomerate great elements. The great elements, they're referred to in the verse. The five great elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So when these little golden seeds of universes go into the accommodating chamber, that the womb of Maya, then the non-conglomerate elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, they're non-conglomerate now. They were conglomerated before. You understand this term, conglomerate? They were all mixed up together before. But by the potency of the glance, they separated. So now you get your earth, your water, your fire, your air, and your ether. Each is standing in its own capacities. So therefore they're now non-conglomerate. And when the seeds, these little golden balls, go into the womb of nature, then these material elements enter them. And then those little universes expand. Yes, they expand. In other words, another step down the path to reaching the point where we're at now. That within the universes, all those elements, they combine again. They become conglomerated again, actually, and made into planets and species of life and so on. And then we enter, and here we are in 1998. So this happens then, that these universes, they're very small to start off with, but as they get filled up with the ingredients of material nature, they expand. And text 14. The same Mahavishnu, entered into each universe as his own separate subjective portions. The divine portions that entered into each universe are possessed of his majestic extension. That is, they are the eternal universal soul Mahavishnu, possessing thousands of heads. So what does this sound like? Bhakta Jagannath, Bhakta Jagannath, Bhakta, into many, many forms. And entering each one is entering each one universe. So this means Garbhadakshay Vishnu is now entering each universe. However, Lord Brahma does make an important point, and it's something we really have to bear in mind. Otherwise, there's potential for confusion a little later on. You'll see tomorrow. There is definite potential for confusion in this regard. He makes it very clear that these expansions, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, they are the eternal universal soul, Mahavishnu. Don't think that these are now separate persons. You have Mahavishnu, he's one person, and now you've got a whole lot of other people, and they're called Garbhadakshay Vishnus, and they're all separate, as we're separate from each other. No, they are the same, but manifesting in different ways, in terms of different functions within the creation. But they are the eternal universal soul, Mahavishnu. This is important to remember. And you'll see tomorrow. Then, now, to just make things even a little more esoteric, if they were not already esoteric enough, text 15, this will be the last one we do today. The same Mahavishnu, created Vishnu from his left limb, Brahma, the first progenitor of beings from his right limb, and from the space between his two eyebrows, Shambhu, the divine masculine manifested halo. So I did point out that at the end of the purport of verse 8, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta mentioned how in verses 10 and 15, and I said particularly 15, how Shambhu manifests is made a bit more clear. So here it is. He actually comes from the space between the eyebrows of Mahavishnu. Yeah. Shambhu. This Vishnu coming from the left limb is now Shiradakshay Vishnu. And this Brahma, who is this Brahma? Now just please remember, we have not actually gone within the universes yet. Garbhadakshay Vishnu has, but we haven't. And the lotus stem, the lotus flower has not come out yet with Lord Brahma on the top of it. That's going to happen shortly. But here we have someone who's being referred to as Brahma, who is coming out of Mahavishnu. So who is this Brahma? That is explained in the purport. Now this is a slightly esoteric concept, so just look and listen carefully. So the divine Purusha is Vishnu. Anyway, Hiranyagarbha, the seminal principle, the portion of the Supreme Lord, is the prime progenitor, who is different from the four-faced Brahma. This is the Brahma who's being referred to here. He's actually more commonly referred to as Hiranyagarbha. And he is the prototype of all Brahmas. This same Hiranyagarbha is the principle of seminal creating energy of every Brahma belonging to each of the infinity of universes. So just like we have a Lord Shiva within every universe, but we've been reading about Shambhu, who is Lord Shiva, but he's definitely not within every universe. In fact, he is such a powerful figure in this whole process of the greater material creation. So as there is a form of Lord Shiva who is beyond the Lord Shiva's in each of our universes. So similarly, there is a form of Brahma who is beyond the Brahmas in each universe. So he, Lord, this Lord, just like Shiradakshay Vishnu or Garbhadakshay Vishnu, it doesn't make any difference really. They are existing, or at least particularly this form of Vishnu is existing in terms of the whole material creation. So Shambhu, that form of Lord Shiva, and Hiranyagarbha, that original form of Lord Brahma, they are presiding over their particular functions within the whole creation. And Lord Shiva, I mean Shambhu specifically, is distributing his potency to the many individual Shivas in the different universes. So this original form of Lord Brahma, Hiranyagarbha, or the original Prajapati, the verse refers to him as, he is distributing his potency to each of the Brahmas in each of the different universes. Therefore, he's referred to as the principle of seminal creating energy of every Brahma in every universe. How does that sound? Is anyone bewildered? Or does it basically make some reasonable amount of sense? Yes? Yes. In the material world, Shambhu embodies the principle of false ego. Do you remember that? The perverted cognitive function. Yes. So he embodies that function, false ego. So this original Hiranyagarbha, this original form of Brahma, embodies the creative energy. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to confuse things any more than they may possibly be at present, but we did mention that when the glance contacts material nature, then the material nature at that point is called pradan, right? And you remember the example of the cosmic soup. So then the cosmic soup, by the impact of the glance, goes into a process of unwinding. Instead of becoming more soupy, it becomes less soupy. And all the ingredients which are otherwise, or at least in the stage of pradan, they're all just mixed up. They become extracted. The earth comes out. The water comes out. The air comes out. I'm just putting it very simply. So in the end, you have mahatattva, which is like, you know, you've got all the ingredients there in their separate states. So the first ingredient that comes out is false ego. The second is the modes. When false ego contacts the mode of goodness, the mind comes, yes. Oh, actually, this is actually a slightly different point. This is a slightly different point. Perhaps I shouldn't have gone into that. Let us just stick with Hiranyagarbha and Shambhu. Okay. So Shambhu manifests the capacity for developing false ego. And he distributes that. We'll be reading tomorrow about how when a living entity gets into Maya, then Shambhu influences him. First thing, Shambhu influences him, he develops false ego. Now Hiranyagarbha is like the sum total of the passionate potency, the creative potency. Yes. The sum total of the complete creative potency within the total material creation is embodied within Hiranyagarbha. Then as the creation goes on further and Lord Brahma appears from Garbhadakshay Vishnu in every universe, then that Hiranyagarbha distributes his creative potency to every Lord Brahma, and therefore they're able to create. You follow the idea? I hope I didn't confuse things too much by going into this Mahatattva business. Yes. Who is making these things happen? Yeah. And that is his function. Right. Interesting point. That's a very interesting esoteric point. Perhaps you can repeat it then. Lada. That, okay. Hiranya means gold, Garbha means womb. So he's saying that it's like the first function of this Hiranyagarbha is, because he embodies the total creative potency, is this expansion of the universes, the golden seeds, by placing the five great elements within them. And in that way, you know, that's the first step in the ongoing process of creation. Right? Yeah. And he's also a person. See, there are two levels of demigods in the material world. One is called the Avarana Gata. Should I write that on the board? Why not? Sort of empowered expansions are within the universes. But there are a number of Avarana Gata demigods who are like very high deities controlling certain important material functions throughout the whole creation, not just the individual universes. But they are empowering specific demigods within the individual universes in terms of these very important functions. And in Bhagavatam, there's some mention, actually. Let me just find. Here it is. 2530. Srimad Bhagavatam, 2530. From the mode of goodness, this is right at the point of Mahatattva manifesting. This is not after Lord Brahma has appeared, and then, you know, Daksha, Kasyapa, Diti and Aditi, and that first generation of living beings are born from Brahma, and then they produce generations of demigods. Here we are right at the point where the Mahatattva is unfolding. From the mode of goodness, the mind is generated and becomes manifest, as also the 10 demigods controlling the bodily movements. Such demigods are known as the controller of directions, the controller of air. In other words, there is a Vayu, the sun god. There is a Surya, a form of the sun god, who's controlling that function. There is a Surya, a form of the sun god, who's controlling that function throughout the entire material creation and empowering the specific demigods in each universe. Then there's the Ashvani Kumars, the fire god. There's an Indra. And then there is the Prajapati, the Hiranyagarbha, and there is the Shambhu. So there is this group of demigods, and they are like prototype demigods, and they empower the demigods within the individual universes, and that is what is being referred to here in text 15. Shambhu, he's already, we understand that, the original form of Lord Shiva, that's very clear. And then there's also this Hiranyagarbha, the original form of Lord Brahma, who empowers all the Brahmas in the material creation. Anyway, you know, I said this section is a little easier than the first section, the yantra section. I don't know if I'm right. I know it's none of it's very easy. It'll get easier. It's about to get easier, so don't lose hope, please. Any comments or questions? Chaturvyuhas. There are two Chaturvyuhas. Chaturvyuhas mean very important expansions of the Supreme Lord, known as Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. The first Chaturvyuha, Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, they are presiding over the four sides of Sweta Dweep. In other words, they're in Goloka Vrindavan, or Mathura and Dwaraka, like that. Anyway, they're in Goloka Vrindavan, and they're controlling that external area known as Sweta Dweep. Amongst them, Sankarshan is, you could say, the most active, because he's an expansion of Balaram, and Balaram is in that mood of serving Krishna by facilitating Krishna's desires in different ways. So even though in that Chaturvyuha, Vasudev is taken to be a form of Krishna, whereas Sankarshan is a form of Balaram, and you know Krishna is sort of superior to Balaram, but still, Sankarshan, in that mood of service which he picked up from Lord Balaram, he is the most active. So then from him comes the second Chaturvyuha, who also are known by the same names, except sometimes that Sankarshan, the second Sankarshan, is sometimes known as Mahasankarshan. Actually, he's not greater than the Sankarshan who's in Goloka, but sometimes it seems he's called like that. And they are the presiding, the supreme presiding deities in the Vaikuntha realm. And from them, all the other Vaikuntha deities expand. And particularly the Sankarshan, again because he's in that mood of facilitating the Lord's program, that Sankarshan expands as Mahavishnu to facilitate Krishna's desires to do with the material world and the rehabilitation of the fallen conditioned souls. How does that sound? Is that clear? Yeah. So Sankarshan, you know, it's not that he's in a superior position, but it is that he is more active because he is in that mood of service. So he is the one who is doing all these things or making sure they get done like that as a service to Krishna. Mataji, you wanted to ask a question, was it? Oh, you, sorry? Yeah, okay. We're going to read shortly, I think it may even be the next text, or anyway, shortly. He then expands as Rudra, is here in the purport of verse 16. See, Shambhu, in text 16, in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes an interesting sort of presentation about Shambhu. He says that he's more like a principle, but then he becomes personified as Rudra. Yeah. And then that Rudra is the one who functions, you know, within the universes. Yeah. Well, that is an interesting question. You know, Shambhu is Shiva, but then, you know, he's involved in the process of creation, but then ultimately he's in charge of destruction. yeah, I don't know if I could really... I don't know if I'm really equipped to give a proper or complete answer to that, but see, one thing is, he's the presiding deity of false ego. That is the fundamental condition of ignorance and the destruction. The destruction of the universe means ignorance takes over. The creative function is finished. Brahma dies. Brahma is dying, at least. He's in his last days. Mahavishnu, Vishnu, who was maintaining, basically understanding the plan of, or his own plan, really, seeing he is Mahavishnu, he withdraws his potency. And that false ego, that ignorance, that fundamental ignorance, takes over. So I think it's something along those lines. Yeah? Something along those lines. And you know, this Rudra is famous for coming out of the forehead of Lord Brahma. And then the Bhagavatam explains how he expands, or actually 11 other persons come out of him, and they want to destroy the material realm. But he tells them, no, wait. So he sends them to a place called Mahakalapur, which is the lowest part of Shiva Loka. Anyway, we're going to discuss about Shiva Loka as time goes on. It's another one of these very sort of extraordinary subject matters. It extends from Vaikuntha through in the causal ocean into the material realm to Kailash and then to Mahakalapur, that place of the great time, meaning the time of destruction. So the Rudras are waiting. They're waiting there. When can we destroy? Yeah. So Lord Shiva. Actually, Lord Shiva is very complex. You know, when we take him, originally Prabhupada says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, as having an abode in Vaikuntha called Sadashiva Loka, where he's existing as Sadashiva. That's the highest form of Lord Shiva, who's a form of Vishnu. Then coming down through, down into the Shambhu, then to Rudra, then the Rudras in Mahakalapur. Lord Shiva is a very complex person. Yeah. Okay. For tomorrow, could you please read verses 16 to 21? It's just a few pages. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Or later on, at least, the same person, although of course he is in a different form, but he's still ultimately the same person. He is responsible for the destruction. So we were sort of... We gave a type of an answer yesterday, and I did check up on it. Oh, instantly, Vaidyanath Prabhu, do you have a Brahma Samhita? I have a spare one if you would like. So anyway, I did check and had some discussions, and there are different ways of looking at it, but the most really concrete thing I came across yesterday, it's in Srila Prabhupada's purport to the third canto, chapter 12, verse 11. 3.12.11. 3.12.11. And that is the chapter which is describing how the four Kumars are requested by Lord Brahma to become Prajapatis and increase the population, but they refuse, and Lord Brahma becomes angry, very angry actually, and from between his eyes comes Rudra, or the Shiva, who is actually the demigod Shiva, who is part of the what they sometimes call the Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, within this universe. So he is that Shiva. But then from that Shiva, well, he was already in a really, he was a manifestation of Lord Brahma's anger. So he was totally possessed